Hello and welcome to the ICTJ Forum, where we discuss transitional justice news and developments. My name is Hannah Dunphy, and today I'm in The Hague, speaking with Liberian activist and Nobel Peace Prize winner Lema Bowie. Lema is a human rights defender who is one of the leading voices in the women's peace movement that brought about the end of Liberia's Second Civil War. Lema's leadership became known to the world in the documentary film called Pray the Devil Back to Hell, and in 2011, she, along with Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Tawakkol Karman, was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for the nonviolent struggle for women's rights. Today, I'm speaking with Lema from The Hague, where she is a keynote speaker at several events marking 100 years of the Peace Palace. Lema, it's such an honor to speak with you, especially on the 10-year anniversary of the signing of the peace agreement that brought about an end to Liberia's civil war. Looking back, how do you remember those final days before the war ended?
It was a fight for survival. We knew that we were the consciences of a group of men who had lost their consciences. We were the face of the suffering masses, the Liberian people. And we really knew that there was nothing else we could do. So peace was the ultimate goal for us. But then beyond that, you had people from the international community who were supposed to be the eye, in my opinion, of the innocent people who were there to ensure that justice was served to the innocent people. And these people ignored us. And some of them were the stiffest opposition to us ever getting close to the room. It was a difficult place, but we did not think about the difficulty of the moment. We thought about the future of our children, and I think it was worth the fight.
Your work in Liberia is captured beautifully in the film Pray the Devil Back to Hell. And in one scene, which I thought was incredibly moving, you actually presented a petition to Charles Taylor. What was going through your head?
Angry like hell, because I'm sitting there looking at this man saying to myself, see this evil man. It's really, really angry. See, anger is fluid like this, and you're pouring it into a container. You have a choice to put it into a violent container, to put it into a non-violent container. The decision you make at the end of the day will define who you are. Usually ask people, what's the difference between Hitler and Dr. King? Or what similarities do they share? And I remember asking someone, they said, nothing but humanity. And I said, no, they were both very angry men. But Dr. King's expression of his anger is what makes him to be celebrated as a hero today. And Hitler's expression of his anger is what has made him a villain in our world today. Taylor and Mandela. Anger. Mandela was angry at the treatment of his people. Taylor's an angry man. But what distinguishes the two? They share that same characteristics. But what distinguishes the two? Their expression. One person chooses a path of violence, the other one chooses a path of peace. And so at that moment for me, it was not about my personal feeling. It was about who wins. Violent people expect violence in response to their action. And when you give them nonviolence as your response, their options are limited because they don't know how to respond to it.
So what was the involvement of women in the transition?
And then after the peace agreement, there was this rush now of men and civil society and international community. Chairman Bryant at the time asked me to serve on the TRC. And it was a careful journey for me. Careful because I did not want it to come off as all that we had done was because some of us were looking for political position. And then ICTJ and other groups came. And then civil society to set up this transitional justice working group, which was predominantly led by male civil society activists. But it really became a space of the powerful voice. in civil society, those who could talk the language of the international NGOs. And the women's organization did not know those languages. It wasn't about justice or the transitional justice process for some of those people. It was about protecting the interests of few individuals. And for others, it was those who were sincerely trying to move the process forward. There was always clash between them and international partners. So it was a mess from the get-go. Yeah.
Could you talk more about the TRC? What was the participation of women like in the TRC?
The whole process of the TRC was, that's my personal opinion, was outside driven, and that doesn't take away from it. But I think if the process was more localized, we would have had a situation where there will be more advocacy around the implementation of the TRC report. But we did not have that situation of, if there was this general holistic involvement, maybe the advocacy would be more and would be difficult for the government to ignore. But for now, they see it as a few individuals talking about it, a few enlightened individuals. I don't think women's participation in that process was at the level that it should have been.
Could you explain the role of women and why you think the role of mothers is so essential in the organizing that you were doing?
The selfless nature of a mother. Mm-hmm. If you had a bowl of cereal and you had 6 hungry children, my own experience have been going without for those children to have. And if you compare that to leadership of our time, we tend to find it a total backward. You know, Taylor was nurtured by his mother. How did he turn out to be the kind of person who had total disregard for women, in that he stood by and observed the rape and abuse of thousands of women? Where did she go wrong? And as a mother myself, I can say, I would never say that she went wrong in any way, because you can bring up your child in the most peaceful way. But there is a structure that we as women work against called patriarchy, where in your house, you teach your son that we are all equals. And then he goes outside and he engages in a world where they'll call him a wimp or sissy. And then over time, he hardens himself and may learn the double role. Someone will say, you have Africa's first female president, because usually that's what we get. Mm-hmm. And you're complaining in this process. And I tell people 2 things. President Sirleaf has always been a politician, mm-hmm, and not a feminist, or not a women's rights advocate. And so when she takes decisions, it's from the politician perspective. The first question is not, how does this affect the women?
I wanted to ask you about Charles Taylor. Does that feel like justice to you, the whole process of Charles Taylor's case in Sierra Leone?
You know, growing up, every time we pass by the Temple of Justice in Liberia, there's this big writing on the wall. It says, let justice be done to all men. And we had a chief justice who came and said he was enlightened and said they should take off the men. And so now it reads, let justice be done to all. So it includes women. And then on that same building, you see the symbol of justice. It's a balanced scale. So every time people talk about Taylor's trial, the first thing that comes to mind is the balance skill. It's a balance. I'm glad that Taylor got arrested. I'm glad that he's been to trial. I'm glad that he's gotten a conviction. I'm sad that he was brought to The Hague. I think it's a decent place, too decent for him. The question I ask myself is, this man is in a facility where he has food, he's warm. I'm sure there's heating in his room during the winters. And during the summer, he has AC. He's been tried, he's going to prison, he never come out. But look at those who got amputated. When it's rainy, do they all have shelter? So at the end of this verdict, Taylor still have millions hidden somewhere. He's still here making calls about properties in Liberia. I would love to see some of his properties sold off and given to victims in both Sierra Leone and Liberia.
Yeah. How have you been reflecting back on the anniversary? Did you always know that someday you would look back upon those events?
Coming to the anniversary of the, I have refused to call it 10 years of peace. Because peace is not just the silencing of the guns. Peace is not just the absence of war. Peace has many things. For me, peace is when justice is not measured by the size of a person's pocket. Peace is when being pregnant is not a death sentence. And there are institutions and there are programs to ensure that a woman going to give birth is not going to die. Peace is when our young people can look beyond the next 24 hours and say, I have a future. But we have a whole population of disenchanted youth. All they need is the right or the wrong situation to plunge us back into another state of anarchy. 10 years, no one is talking about reparation for victims.
Violence against women and women's rights is something that you're continuing to work on quite actively. And I can't help but look at what's happening, for example, to women in Egypt, other advocates of women's rights who are specifically targeted for speaking up, for being part of their country's transition to a better future. What advice would you give them?
It's harsh, it's difficult, but if you chart the pleasures you get when you follow your heart, you cannot compare it to the few moments of discomfort, you know. For those young people who are like, I'm going to this field. First thing first, never forget why you came into the field. Mm. Never forget your first love, as I call it. Never forget your calling. And every now and then, go back to that. 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, go back to that calling. Mm. And it will remind you that the harshness of the field is worth it.
This week you're unveiling a bust of Bertha von Suttner. So she's the first woman to be part of the Peace Palace. She was also the first woman to win the Nobel Prize. She said, "The true and convinced peace workers are always optimists." And she encouraged them to persist, persist, and continue to persist. How do you stay optimistic on a daily basis?
I have a very strong faith in God. I believe that I'm at a place where God really wants me to be. I see my work as God's work. Mm-hmm. I'm on a mission for God. There's a quote in the Bible that says, "He whom he calls, he equips." Mm-hmm. And I will not say that I haven't had my down moments where I just weep, you know. And then I always find good in every situation, you know. Like some of those other girls I see, because I tell myself, you were one of those girls. If you've read that book, and you can't give up because God did not give up on you.